Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. It's episode 77 being distributed simultaneously worldwide on the day that you're listening to it now, perhaps, or perhaps perhaps not. I don't know what I'm talking about. That would be me, Jason Snell, across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Well, if you don't know what you're talking about, then we are in big trouble.
It's been a week. It's been a week. But we're releasing
it. Been a week.
Well, the thing about podcasts is we can release it simultaneously, immediately, but people can watch it whenever, just like Netflix, right? They can they can say, oh, all of Daredevil is out. Yay. But, you know, then it may be like 6 months later, somebody's like, hey, I finally finished Daredevil. So you never know when people are actually consuming this stuff. All you
can do
is release it into the world and then whatever.
It's not our baby. We just we have to let it go.
Yeah, you got to let it out in the world and see what happens.
Yeah, let it fly.
Yeah, exactly. Or crash. One of those.
Or crash. That's a possibility, sure. We'll give it our best shot, though.
Yeah.
77. Feeling pretty, 77. Pretty
lucky.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm. Lucky. Luck of the Irish.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some nice letters to cover today, and you've got a couple of reviews that you posted in the last week that we should talk about. But the big thing coming up, as we record this, coming up later over the weekend, is the season finale of The Walking Dead, television's basically number one show, and you're going to do some special stuff for it, right?
Yes. Every time you think you're out, they keep pulling me back in.
That's what editors do, is they assign you things you don't want to do as a writer. I've discovered as being an editor. It's part of the job.
Yeah, mine was like, you and Dan could do like a back and forth. And I said, oh, you mean like this one? Where we did it on the Glenn, the Glenn non-death.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, well, okay, probably not then. Maybe you could just like write about... And I said, oh, you mean like when I said I would never be writing about it again? Okay, whatever. No problem.
Yeah.
So, but you know what? They want it. They got it. They pay the bills. So I'm gonna do it. And you know what? I'm gonna watch it anyway. And I'm gonna have thoughts and or frustrations about it. So I am going to live blog it / tweet it on East Coast time on Sunday.
Oh, nice.
And then I will use that time afterwards to write my take on how it went and what they did right and wrong, and then I'll post it probably right about the time people are finishing the West Coast time. So all good.
Makes sense. And you've been mostly keeping up with it, right? I mean, this is one
Week.
See, this is one of the shows that's the advantage of this. If it was some show that was doing its finale and you had not been keeping up, I suppose it would be like, gotta watch nine hours of it. And but you're watching the show anyway, so why not?
And it's the benefit of having Dan and I do these things simultaneously, because 2 days earlier, it's like, hey, guys, next week finale of American Crime Story, O.J. Simpson, you got to be on that. And I think Dan's much more caught up on than that, because he wrote the review. And I'm still like maybe four behind. So I'm not doing it.
All right. So you get off the hook for that one. Boy, I wonder what the verdict's going to be. The O.J. Simpson case.
Wow. I didn't even see that coming. And you got me. Made me laugh.
Coming,
I'm ashamed.
Coming right down Fifth Avenue there.
I'm a little ashamed that was... Yeah,
I'm that's okay. I feel shame too for saying it. So it's only fair. There's a lot of shame to go around.
There's a lot of shame.
We're down
in
the shame hole.
You've been busy too, by the way. Separately, you've been busy.
I have been busy. Well, there's a lot of tech talk, a lot of computer stuff.
I heard that.
Tech talk.
There's a company called... Apple?
The Apple.
Oh, Apple.
The Apple Fruit Company.
Yes.
They make various kinds of apples, including the Macintosh apples. And it's like their 40th anniversary today, and there were a bunch of pieces about that. I got a call last night from the editor of I got an email from the editor of The Verge saying, hey, I'm, again, editors. He's like, there's one piece that I kind of am missing from our coverage. Do you want to write it? But we need to post it tomorrow morning, East Coast time. And it was like 7 o'clock. I'm like, how can I say no? So, you know, I did that. Yeah, and writing reviews of all the new stuff that they announced last week. So, yeah, it's been busy time.
Been a little busy time.
A little busy.
Okay. That's what we're paid for.
It's feeling good, though, because we're getting toward the weekend, because this is the capper
of
the week,
this
TVTM.
This is basically the great drink at the end of the week. We just pop the cap on that baby, and we just... A little bit of vintage, two of us.
It's like the end credits in a movie, I like to think. Like there's like a like a guitar solo and the credits roll and you just kind of walk off into the sunset as the, that's what the TVTM is. We are the awesome guitar solo at the end.
Okay.
Of the movie.
I'll go with that.
You go with that. Okay. That's what I've decided, of the 80s montage movie. You did write a couple of really, I was sort of surprised by one and kind of intrigued by the other, reviews this week.
I know where this is going.
Yeah, so we talked a long time ago when this was announced. We talked about The Girlfriend Experience on Stars, coming from Steven Soderbergh, but that that it was going to be Lodge Kerrigan and Amy Simetz who were going to kind of run it. And you wrote a review this week, and I thought it was really interesting because I remember my reaction at the time was, do we need another, you know, is this going to be another cliched kind of Hollywood, oh, it's a story about prostitution. So many stories about prostitution way out of whack for how much prostitution there actually is in, let's say, the United States.
Right.
And you know, your review kind of dealt with that, but it sounds like the way that they've handled this subject matter and the way that these two showrunner director type people, writer directors, have explored this subject, it sounds far more kind of fascinating and responsible and interesting, while also like never forgetting that it's also there's a lot of sex.
Yes, there is. There is that. Yeah, I'm hoping that. And I still don't know if that will be the reaction. As I said in the review, I put out all the stuff that they're doing. Some of it is just, you know, some of it's so subtle that it just hits you slowly. I mean, it took me like two or three episodes of Mr. Robot to like, you know, have that nagging feeling in the back of my head, like, this is not right. Something's wrong here.
Sure.
And we know we're familiar with that. And then you realize, oh, okay. Oh, so much of the composition is off and they're doing this strange and then why are they doing it? And you kind of try to figure out all these things. Whereas in The Girlfriend Experience, there was something about it that was different and, you know, started taking some notes and all that stuff. But ultimately what it was just a very interesting decision. It could be either inside baseball or minutia or just stuff that people don't really care about. But it's, they all made a decision. So the two, Lodge Kerrigan and Amy Simetz, and also Steven Soderbergh, who was involved in that element of how it should look, they decided that, you know, don't use the camera to influence. So have no point of view. That's what the camera normally does. It's however they shoot it and however they shoot things, they can influence your perception of the character. Mm-hmm. In so many different ways. And instead, they decided to do this really lowly, you can barely feel it happening. They've got the camera basically sitting like a spy in the room. So when people are in the room having this quote unquote transactional relationship, the camera feels like it's not on the bed or it's not even on the couch where they might be sitting. It's in a little chair on the side. And there's not a whole lot of flashiness. There's no music to make you think, oh, it's sexy time. Or like there's not like an ominous thing like, oh, this guy, he's a freak. He's going to punch her or something. It just shoots it. And they – even with the way where they frame it, not only how they frame it but where they put the camera, it's very level. So it's not swooping high or low. It's very there. There's a minimal use of lingering close-ups, which are also director's way of influencing your perception of the events as a viewer. And they don't overuse close-ups, and they blended all the furniture in a way that was not distracting. It didn't make it seem like, hey, this is a bachelor pad. It's going to be sexy time again. No, it's just like, it's a lot of neutral colors. Again, I don't know if this is going to be the average person, because while all this is happening, there are people who have no clothes on and they look really great and then they have sex. So it's going to be, are you noticing that? Or are you noticing the other more obvious stuff like, oh, this person is performing a sex act and whatnot. So I don't know. I think I think that's what they're doing too. They're leaving it up to the viewer. You judge. Basically they're saying, is this a morally awful situation, or can you understand the woman's reason for doing it? And at the end of the day, I think what they're trying to do is say, here's a powerful woman who is making a decision she's not broken, and she is second year law student. She's really smart. There's not something that happened in her past that makes her want to be a high price call girl. The next thing that element of that is just like, what is she getting out of it other than money, which she obviously likes, but she gets this sense of power. And so you end up feeling, I think, a little more sad about the men in her life because they are clearly broken. They're there for a reason. It's a different way to do it. It's very non-judgmental, and it makes you look at what is a relationship. Is this a is this a viable relationship? Does this actually have merit, or is it just dismiss it? Because, you know, one of them is a guy who's lost his wife, and you think, well, fine, go date at the, you know, the senior center, or go date, you know, your own age. But that's not real life, especially if this guy's got a certain amount of money. And what does he need in his life? What's missing? What does it make him feel good? And it's honestly, in this case, it's really not the sex. The sex is, it's the least sexy sex I've ever seen. It happens, but it's not erotic. And what happens is there's a lot of talking. And as I said in my review, a lot of really expensive talking because he's about $1,000 an hour.
Well, I think the title itself, right? The idea here is that it is not just about the sex. It's about the full experience. So it's being able to unburden yourself on the woman, to spend time with them and feel like you're in this connected relationship. So it's the whole package, which is fascinating, right? Because that means, again, yes, it's about the sex, but it's not just about the sex. It's about more than that. If it was just about the sex, it would be easier to maybe classify it, but it's not. There's a bigger story happening here about who these people are and what their needs are and why they have come to this point.
Yeah, and I could have, you know, I didn't watch all of the episodes. I had watched enough to where I could get the feel of it.
As we talked about last week, right?
As we talked about last week, totally right in the wheelhouse of exactly what happened. And I had to get it out. But I could have got a little bit more wonky because I think there was an interesting element that I didn't get to. But again, in the back of my mind, I kept thinking, oh, you know, don't get hung up on that, because literally most of the people who watch this are going to be like, here's some high-end premium cable HBO level, you know, nudity. And I think that's going to be the number one thing. But beneath it, the thing that you could have got a little bit, or I could have got a little more wonky about, was, you know, notions of relationships and happiness and tradition. Like, if you're this person, obviously these are all men at this stage, do you want to be away from the constraints and strings and emotional baggage of someone you maybe spent 40 years or 20 years of your life with? And if you do, what does that say about you or them or the relationships, or just trying to keep things fresh? And is it wrong to like want, as I say, the finer things in life? I mean, everybody kind of wants that. They want a new car. They want a new computer. They want things like that. We all have that desire. And this time it's like, if you have the money to do this, and also, I guess, the moral, you know, judgment to do it, you're basically saying, yeah, I would actually prefer like this beautiful woman to be sit next to me and talk to me about my, and it's, by the way, there's a lot of talking. So I'm talking to her about my life. That's the person who's choosing the reflection back on him is not, you know, oh, we've been married 30 years and she's looking off out the window, or she's nagging me not to eat something from my heart. It's interesting on that level what they're getting at about relationships or two people coming together. So
very interesting. Mm-hmm. So that's on Stars starting Sunday?
Starting Sunday, yes, yep. I believe so. And it's, it's on Stars.
All right. Let's see. So the other review you did, and this is my surprise, is you wrote about Lopez, which is the new comedy from George Lopez on TV Land. Mm-hmm. Now, from these facts, one would probably guess that it wasn't very good and that you ripped it a new one. And that is not what happened.
I love that. From these facts.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's like if you just told me, hey, George Lopez has a show, it's a sitcom, it's on TV Land, what do you think? I would be like, woo, stinker. But no.
I think a lot of people not only took that approach and decided that they don't have time in our, you know, time constraint world of too much TV, and they passed on it and they didn't review it at all. It was not It was not widely reviewed. And I think some people just decided, it's Lopez. It's going to suck. You know, he's been given enough opportunity to give us his sense of style and his comedy, and I don't like it, or it's not funny or whatever. But I think that what he's like trying to do in this show and giving him a benefit of the doubt, I think was kind of nice, right? Was letting letting the show just sort of speak to me. He also had a good DNA, as I put in the review. It's the guys who helped launch Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. And it's not Silicon Valley. I go out of my way to say it's not there yet. But it's so much better than any other thing he's ever done. And partly it's because they made him relax. You know, it's not a multi-camera sitcom. He doesn't feel like he's got to be on all the time. He doesn't have to entertain. He's a very big presence, and his humor is big. He's not a big, subtle guy. You know, I wish there were moments in this, because it certainly feels more subtle, certainly more subtle than he's used to. There were times when I was like, oh, if you just didn't make that joke, that scene would have ended so much better. But then I thought, okay, well, this is certainly huge progress from George Lopez, and maybe that's just not his style. He's going to make that joke because that's him, and this is what the show's talking about. It's about him and his current life. And I will say this. It's shot like a movie. He's much more casual and laid back. He's funny. He's real. And probably most importantly, he realizes, like, okay, I've done a lot of dumb stuff in my life, and let's make fun of me. And he does make fun of himself, and there's still a lot of race stuff. Most, you know, 90% of what he does normally is race. So that's down to about 60% here. And he also spreads it around. He's got a African-American guy who's a comic who opens for him, and they're friends. And that guy handles some of the race jokes. And honestly, of the 60% of the race jokes that he's probably dealing with, a couple of them are like so spot on George Lopez style that you're like, eh, not that funny. But I think with the DNA of the other writers, so he's not writing the shows, which I think is really interesting. The guys who did Silicon Valley are writing the shows for the most part. And I think what they're telling him is like, you know what, let's dial back on that. That's too on the nose about, you know, for example, I had a reference there where there was a joke about, oh, all white people want to hand the Mexican guy the car ticket because he's the valet. And that's not a funny joke 10 years ago. You know, maybe that's when it first came, but it's certainly not a funny joke in 2016. He makes a little bit of a spin on it in this instance, and it makes it slightly funnier, but it's not there. But okay, he missed that one. He does other ones that are much, much better. And I think that's these guys telling him, hey, how about we approach this thing slightly different than you might have been thinking. Lopez has got to sign off on it, so he does. I just think there's, you know, I watched three episodes. This is what they gave us. I watched all three. Mm-hmm. I was eager to do it, and it got better with each episode. And I think when he starts having more cameos, he's got a Snoop Dogg cameo and Ed Begley, the former mayor of Los Angeles, is in there. There's some interesting stuff. But I liked it. He did not push me away. And I thought to myself, okay, now outside of the humor, if you factor in how many shows George Lopez has done and how many times he's banged his head on the wall and his own preference to his comedy style, this is really different. And I'm interested in why it's different and why he decided to take this approach. And I think he did really well. So, yeah, surprising.
Yeah, no.
I'm not going to say it's going to end up great, but it's certainly a step in the right direction and better than anything else he's done.
Right, and maybe worth a look for people because who might have written it off before.
Right, definitely.
That's interesting. Yeah, I was going to make a joke there, and I feel like it's such a positive thing that I don't want to trample on it too much. But when you said it's got a bunch of guest stars, including Ed Begley Jr., I really just wanted to shout, ooh, they got Begley. I'm sure he's really hard to get. Sorry, Ed Begley Jr. I enjoy Ed Begley Jr. and all his appearances.
There's my dog laughing and stuff. But my dog was not laughing. He's barking and stuff at me. But I laughed at the Ed Begley appearance because I thought they have a joke about him. He makes a joke about him that's kind of – it's definitely a cable era joke.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. And they revisit it a little bit. And but Begley's such a good sport. He appears in the episode and goes in a different direction entirely and steals the show. It's a great cameo from him. I loved it. That's cool. I loved it. And he's setting himself up, and then he's taking it up a couple of notches. That's very funny.
You know, my favorite random cameo in one of my favorite movies of all time, This is Spinal Tap, is Ed Begley Jr. He is the first drummer who dies in Spinal Tap. And every time I appear, it's like, it's Ed Begley. And then he's dead. But it's very funny. So
he's a good sport.
Tactical use of Ed Begley Jr. Okay, Lopez on TV Land too, which you have taught me this. You'd think I would learn at some point. It's like every channel has an original content strategy, and including TV Land. But I had that moment where I was like, a show on TV Land. Okay. I don't even know. They had the Hot in Cleveland, right? But this seems very different. And anyway, I was surprised.
Yeah, actually, it's funny that you mentioned that, because we have to keep track of how things are revamping all the time. And yeah, Hot in Cleveland was a step in a direction for them a while ago. That was a new direction for TV Land, which was mostly repeats. But then since then, they have decided to get a little hipper and newer, and they've got Younger, which is actually the name of the show. It's actually really good. Younger is very good. They have Teachers, a series that I reviewed extremely well, loved Teachers in January. And they have Jim Gaffigan's show. Huh. So now they've got this. They've come a long way. They're rebranding. They're getting younger and they're getting hipper.
All right. Interesting. TV Land. The next step is they will change their name to some word, right?
Yes, like freeform.
Yeah, rhombus. And you're like, oh, what is a rhombus? Well, it's a geometric shape that we think represents Generation X.
Yes.
Okay, whatever. Yeah. TV Land, I remembered, TV Land. But
right.
Mm-hmm. Nope, we're rhombus now. Sorry.
I think I would just stick with TV Land.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And then add a tagline, younger, hipper, or something.
Yeah, sure. Not that one.
Not that one.
Not just reruns. That could be their slogan.
Yeah, not just reruns.
All right.
Actual good shows. How about that? That's a good slogan.
Oh, actual good shows. On rhombus.
That's a little cutting edge too.
Mm. I want to do some. Want to do some letters, or do you want to Columbo me first?
No, I think we should do that. My dog already Columbo'd us. So
yeah, that's true. Okay. So first, we've got our Dean from the 707 travel update.
Why does this make me laugh every time? It's like the dude's on the road. It's like he's a professional baseball player.
Yeah, exactly. Except he never goes home. He's more like one of the Harlem Globetrotters or something. He just travels. He's always traveling.
Lives on the road.
He is in the 803, which is South Carolina, watching American Gothic. And he says, Gary Cole is almost as scary as he was in Office Space. Ah, Gary Cole. I remember America. That was Sean Cassidy did that show. Former teen heartthrob Sean Cassidy turned TV producer.
And a good one at that.
That was a CBS show, American Gothic.
Yeah.
Alice wrote in, and this is good. So Alice was the one we answered a question of hers on last week's show, and she wrote in on Twitter to say, I was about to quit my run when I heard my name on the podcast. So thank you for helping my fitness regime. I thought that was really good. This is how we're saving lives, as we mention people's names on a podcast. And then she said, as for my area code, it's complicated because I think we gave her a hard time about not having an area code. Plus 8621, which is Shanghai, to the plus 613, which is Melbourne, to 212, New York. And now she's back in the plus 613.
Okay, she was right. It is complicated, but it's fascinating, and I like that. That's why we have to have it included.
So an entire tweet with just her numbers, her digits.
There. I was happy because that means a lot to us.
Yeah. So I hope, Alice, that we have prompted you to run further again. Alex from the 908 wrote in.
Okay.
The New Jersey.
Okay. Jersey. I was going to say, I don't remember hearing 908.
908, it's Jersey. And Alex writes, hot on the heels of the news that this is breaking, by the way. This is breaking. This came in moments before we begin recording. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia has been renewed for seasons 13 and 14, ensuring it will be on the air until at least 2019, tying the record for the longest lasting live action sitcom with Ozzie and Harriet.
It's pretty amazing.
I got to wondering what the currently airing longest running shows have been. It turns out, excluding cartoons and reality shows, the longest-running active series is, can you guess?
I'm going to say it's either because CSI is off the air. I think it's probably going to be either Law and Order or NCIS.
Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, right. Yeah, one of those.
Grey's Shondaland debuted spring 2005, followed by It's Always Sunny summer 2005, and Bones and Supernatural fall 2005.
Oh, Supernatural. That should have been our first pick.
I know. It's
as the 27th season of Supernatural
exactly.
Airs.
All four of these shows have been renewed for next season already, with Bones' producers confirming season 12 will be their last. My question is, will either of the other two remaining members of the class of 2005 be joining Always Sunny in 2019? Who will be the last show standing? And how have all these mediocre shows managed to stay on the air for this absurdly long amount of time? Alex in the 908.
Well, let's go reverse for mediocre is generally popular. And so life expectancy has no direct correlation to quality. Probably the opposite.
Mediocre, you want to hit it right in the middle, then everybody is going to kind of like it, right?
Yeah, just want to be mediocre.
Right down the middle.
Yeah. Soft enough to be embraced by the masses.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough sharp right angles.
Yep.
I think of all those, it's kind of fascinating when I saw the news that when that was happening to Sunny, I was a little shocked because I think those guys are, I thought they had been ready to move on, but obviously they love what they're doing. They put in another great year this year. Some people were saying that this year was one of their better ones. And I think, you know, they don't do too many episodes. So it's just, it's tight. It's compact.
I think that's it, right? I was thinking of Cass, right? I mean, they basically settled on 10 now. They do 10 episodes a year.
Yeah.
And I was thinking one of the reasons that shows don't last a long time is because people just can't grind, especially if they're doing like 20, you know, 20 episodes. But even if it's 13 hour-long drama episodes a year, it's kind of hard. But Sunny, it's a comedy. They only do 10 a year. So everybody on that show can do lots of other stuff and come back and do Sunny. And that kind of makes sense to me. Whereas something like Bones, I imagine, or Supernatural, where you've got the same cast for the whole run doing a broadcast TV-sized show orders every year. Good Lord, those people must be exhausted.
Yeah, I don't know how they do it. And
David Boreanaz, there's nothing left.
Right.
He's got nothing left to give.
He's given it all. But yeah, those Bones fans are super loyal, and that is a hugely popular series. But as far as our boys in Sunny, I know most of them pretty well. And the thing that I think keeps them going, and I think I was in touch semi-recently. I wanted to see how close it was. I think remember the year where they had a whole thing about Mac getting fat? Mac gets fat, basically, was a whole concept. They talked about how when they're coming up with ideas for the season and arcs to do 10 episodes on, that if they still make themselves laugh, if they still bounce around the ideas and then, you know, everybody just dies laughing and thought, oh, yeah, let's try that, then they want to do it. And so they must have, after this last year, they must have said, you know what, we're kind of on a roll. We all still have fresh ideas. And I'm guessing that when John Landgraf came to them and offered them this idea to go, you know, it could be that they just said yes and didn't think things out, but it could have been also that they have a couple of ideas in reserve and they probably told them. I'm sure John would want to know, okay, what would you do in the next two seasons? And he probably just said, well, these are our ideas we're kicking around or we like, and he probably thought, oh, that sounds hilarious. Let's do it. And why not?
Right. And my gut feeling is that Grey's Anatomy could go on forever only because it reminds me of ER. It's a hospital ensemble. Yeah. They can keep swapping in and out the actors. They don't need to keep paying the same lead actors huge amounts of money to hold down the show and while they're exhausted, because it's, you know, it's just sort of an endless wheel of characters, just like ER. Remember, ER was on for a billion years.
Oh, yeah.
And there was nobody left by the end, but it didn't matter because it was just a box that you could put doctors in and there was a show.
That's they were around forever. Caitlin was the I had tweeted something out where she's going to be doing Caitlin Olsen is going to be doing, and if you only do 10, you have time to do other stuff,
like, right?
obviously Mary Elizabeth Ellis has done other stuff and is currently doing other stuff with Grindr and stuff. So, she's got a new gig, and as soon as I heard it, I was like, well, great. Maybe they can just finally just give her the Emmy that she's needed for. In my book, she's due at least at minimum 3 Emmys. And her and I were tweeting back and forth in public about that. So that was my last contact with them. But those guys are great. And I think that, you know, they've all had levels of success in different series. Glenn Howerton was in Fargo and Charlie Data's movies. Rob's been doing other projects. So I think they're all pretty happy.
And I wonder if you think the existence of FXX is a part of this, too, that like this is like a flagship kind of show for that network, which is relatively new. Would that be a reason to keep it, give it a couple more years of?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Again, we go back to having content on the shelf, and something that's highly repeatable, much less people don't want to watch dramas, very often on repeat, unless it's something simple like Law and Order, but they tend to want to watch, overwhelmingly want to watch comedies over and over again, particularly if they're funny. Why not? So,
sure.
And new generations of stone college kids are going to come around and find It's Always Sunny, and just they'll be linked to that network forever.
Yeah. All right. So there you go, Alex in the 908. If you had to pick, who is the last? Is it Grey's Anatomy? Is it Sunny? Sunny going to just keep on rolling with 10 episodes a year for a while?
In my dream scenario, I think it's going to be Grey's, but it's in my dream scenario, once they get to the second of the next two, and realize Grey's going to go on, they decide that they would rather die than give up the fight, and then Sonny just keeps going.
I just almost want to say Supernatural, figuring like at this point they missed their window of canceling it, and now it will just live forever like some sort of supernatural creature, right? Where it's just like if you forget to die, then you just keep living forever, and that's just how it is.
Yeah, that's a good
thing. It will never go away. Supernatural. Never, ever. I had a friend of mine always was like, oh, you should watch it. It's pretty good. And I'm like, the longer it runs, the more I don't want to watch it, because it's like, good Lord, it's like 12 seasons of it. I'm not going to watch 12 seasons of Supernatural. Sorry. Okay, here's from Alan in the area code of record, +1415.
Nice.
Nice +1. Nice country code there. Alan writes, it seems to me the visuals in Better Call Saul have really kicked it up a notch in the last two episodes. It reminds me of Breaking Bad, in that I thought its first season was good, and then the second season got really great.
Hmm.
It's a comment, not really a question. I don't know if you've seen the most recent Better Call Sauls, but that's an endorsement for season two of Better Call Saul.
I have, and I think they have, because they're out and about more often, they have done that. So, yeah, I think it's just by nature it had to get better because they were already back in the same area. But the first season, they were indoors a lot, especially with his brother and in all the law offices. They weren't out that much. But now they're outside a little bit more, and that's probably what the look is. But I would just say my only argument to that little statement is that the first season of Breaking Bad was phenomenal visually. So. Not just good and got better, phenomenal.
David from the 336. Now, that is that even an area code?
Are they trying to get
it
us?
It is. It's in North Carolina.
Really?
It is. So
David, I like that one, the 336.
336. So it's easy to remember, right?
It's easy, yeah.
I read a review for the new season of Daredevil that attributed some of the drop in quality to a change in showrunners. I'm wondering if you guys think that showrunners make a difference in the quality of a show. And maybe do you have an instance where a change in showrunners actually improved a show? Can you think of that?
Showrunners definitely make a difference.
I'm about 5 episodes into Daredevil. And I don't think there's been a drop in quality, but I haven't gone through the whole season. Daredevil's a funny case where the showrunner was gone before the show even aired, because the showrunner had committed to doing a different show. And I think there was not a lot of intent that it would come back for a second season. They were building to this Defenders thing, and then they renewed it and they had to get new showrunners. So Daredevil was kind of in a pickle regardless. But I'm trying to think of, like, there are a lot of cases where the showrunner leaves and the show gets worse, because they do make a difference, but getting better.
You could maybe make the argument that The Walking Dead got better.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and that's been through two now, so three total.
Right.
But yeah, the showrunner definitely has a huge part to play, because if you especially if it was, how do I put this? Especially if it's like it's an auteur thing. So like if it's Mad Men or if it's Mr. Robot. I mean, they just announced on Mr. Robot that Sam Esmail is not only going to be the showrunner, he's going to direct all 10 episodes.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's got this crazy shooting schedule he's putting together. It's really hard to do, because when you're the showrunner, you have to deal with lots of things, not just that week's episode. You're dealing with everything.
Right.
You are running the show. So you're dealing with the writers. You're dealing with the networks, whoever's producing. There's all kinds of things in play. So they definitely matter. Whether somebody improved it, I bet there's a pretty good example we're missing. But I would say you could make the argument certainly that TWD got better.
I got a couple. I got a nerd one. Star Trek: The Next Generation started with Gene Roddenberry in charge, and as I've said on this podcast before, it got better once he was unable to. He got sick, and he was very old, and then he passed away. But after a couple of years, they put in a new person in charge, and the show got dramatically better. And that's a case where you kind of had the old guard not really contributing positive things to the show, and I would say that recent example, the Muppets, they famously fired one of the showrunners mid the middle of this first season. I watched the episodes that aired after that firing, and they're way better. Like, they're way better. I'm not sure whether it's a triumph that should come back for another season or something like that, but they clearly saw, like, oh, this take on it is wrong. It's rubbing people the wrong way. There was a change, and the show got better. So, you know, I have seen that, but usually it goes the other way. I'd almost say this is here. You want to hear some TV heresy?
Yes.
I actually think that The West Wing.
Oh, I was just going there.
I feel like The West Wing was so far off the rails when Aaron Sorkin was still on it,
mm-hmm.
that when they fired him, I don't know if it got a lot better, but I don't think it got people. The conventional wisdom is he left and it got bad. But it's like, I think it got bad before he left. I think that's one of the reasons that they felt okay getting rid of him, is because he was kind of losing it. And then in the last season, it actually, I thought, kind of got better again, like it did in the first couple of years. It was never the same, but it's not quite like it got better. But
I think that was John Wells.
Sort of stabilized it after.
Yeah, he would be definitely a stabilizing factor, and sometimes you need that. And I think you probably nailed that one. I would say that certainly the show probably got better because Aaron was way over his head with the writing and late
and the mushrooms
and going through the airport with mushrooms, mm-hmm. All kinds of crack and stuff. So that's not good.
Hey, did you see they're going to do a live A Few Good Men?
Yes, thought that was funny.
Yeah.
I hope I draw the long straw in having to review
don't want to do that. Maybe they'll do it, as I said on Twitter, maybe they'll shoot it at Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
That's mean.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It is. One of my favorite podcasts, the bad movie podcast, The Flophouse, I just listened to a bonus episode that they did, and it was, they watched an episode of Studio 60. It's like, wow, kick a guy when he's down. That's an easy one. That's an easy one. And those guys are comedy writers, so it's like, this is not how comedy writing works. Studio 60. Not good. We got an OG letter here now.
Okay.
Larry from the Vale.
Oh, yeah.
The 408.
Mm-hmm.
Says, in these times of confusion, I think there are more good half-hour comedies than ever before. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Veep, Silicon Valley, cartoon comedies like Archer, BoJack Horseman, and Bob's Burgers. There's a lot of really funny TV that gets no publicity or is hidden on channels rarely visited, like Teachers. Hey, look
mm-hmm.
at that.
Teachers, for
Angie
sure.
Tribeca, You're the Worst. These are nice half-hour humor breaks to stockpile on your DVR, but most people have never heard about them. Can we sustain this vast number of comedies, especially when some are so hard to find? I'm always looking for a laugh, and I'm missing Existential French Woman. There's a callback.
Yes. I think they totally can be sustained because, A, there's tons of money in the 30-minute sitcom. And I'm glad he pointed that out because, you know, I'm already on record as saying that it's the 30-minute dramedy which is much more in peril. And like we just saw, Togetherness was canceled. And so those ones are a lot harder to go. And you know, Larry wasn't even mentioning like Catastrophe, which I just watched all six episodes. My review's coming up. And I tweeted out last night and I said, okay, 2016 comedies, your leader in the clubhouse is Catastrophe. Bring your A game. It's the one of the funniest 6 hours. It's just amazing. And, you know, you've still got Casual. You've got, well, Louis is going to be taking a break. But yeah, now here comes Veep and Silicon Valley and Aziz Ansari. So there you have all these shows that are also on the streaming content that are going to be around. Comedies. Yeah, the environment can totally be sustained. Even if the ratings are not doing that great, because you can sell it internationally and it'll be fine. But also, it's cheaper to make a sitcom. Way cheaper to make a sitcom than a drama.
Yeah,
like half as much, like 50%.
I went through a period of despair a few years ago where it felt like there was not a lot. Like the comedies that I had been watching kind of all went away, and what would I watch it? But there's so much now. It really is great.
Including It's Always Sunny.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. And that's why it's been renewed for its 90th and 91st season.
Yeah, there's so much good stuff out there. I'm happy about that. I think the sad part is that there is so much that our jobs are, and the listeners' jobs are always the same. It's like, hey, you guys really need to like watch this to your friends and family.
Yeah. I'll tell you since Larry mentioned it, my wife at least once a week says, so when is You're the Worst coming back? And I always say next year. And she says, what? No. I said, yeah, just like the last time you asked me, but it doesn't matter. The next week, she's like, when is You're the Worst coming back? I'm like, it's next year. What? No, but there's lots of other good stuff out there. Lots of
well,
other good, fun
the
stuff.
Rule of thumb,
Catastrophe
by the way.
being a great. She's actually just started watching Catastrophe.
So. Oh, good, you guys
catching up with
season
me.
One and season two. I laughed so hard, and it's also there's touching stuff, there's funny stuff, there's anger, there's drama. But boy, there was something about and I love season one, but there was something about how many times I laughed on season two. And there at one point, I looked down at my notes. And I had written this whole paragraph basically saying none of these jokes will ever see the light of day in print because they're so filthy. Mm-hmm. It just won't. You just couldn't do it. So, yeah, I loved it. Great. I finished it and I just wanted – in fact, that's the other tweet I put out last night. It was like I can't remember, honestly, Jason. I can't remember – and I watched a lot of good shows where I've watched six in a row and immediately wanted to watch them all again in the same order. I mean, maybe Arrested Development was probably the last time when I could have found it and I could binge it on Netflix. But this was the time. I was like, I will watch these six right now again.
I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. More laughs to be had out there.
Plenty more laughs. Mm-hmm. Here's one from Tony from the +44. He's in Birmingham, England. Birmingham.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Although knowing the English, it's probably pronounced boom. Just drop like all the letters. He says, really enjoying the show after my good friend Matt, the bottle episode, also from the +44, pointed you my way. Thank you, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Just wondered if you'd heard much about the conflict surrounding Black Mirror, the superb British anthology show written by Charlie Brooker. After starting life on broadcast TV Channel 4, it was recently picked up by Netflix for an extended 12-episode run that has attracted stars like Bryce Dallas Howard and Alice Eve to appear in episodes. Channel 4 recently admitted they would not be broadcasting the show anymore at all and hit out at the producers for not giving them exclusivity, given they first got the show on the air. But the producers came back and suggested it was only once the show started airing on Netflix and got good ratings there did they show any interest in renewing the show since its last episode in 2013. It sounds to me a lot like sour grapes on the part of a broadcast network that was too slow to capitalize on the growing popularity of one of their homegrown shows. What do you think about this? Are there any examples in the U.S. of Netflix snapping up a broadcast show and giving them more money to play with? Keep up the great work, Tony.
Well, sure. They've done that with Mindy. They did that with
all right. Hulu picked Kimmy Schmidt, Mindy, right? And mm-hmm. and they took Kimmy Schmidt. Netflix took Kimmy Schmidt off of NBC's hands before it even aired.
Mm-hmm. And there's some dramas as well. There's yeah.
You think
if it makes sense to them if Hulu or Amazon, whoever, already have it, it makes sense to them to, you know, continue it and grow future episodes. It just makes sense to their stockpile, to their bench. But I don't know this specific instance with Black Mirror. I think that he did a very good job of explaining that. And yeah. I was laughing while he did it, which is probably exactly what happened. It's like, if you're not in a rush to renew us, you don't love us that much. But then now you really love us if we, because we're killing it over on Netflix. Once the Americans were able to get a look at this and think it was funny. So I can see both sides of that, but probably that's how it unfolded. And, you know, I look at those things and I think, you know what, that's a business story. Yeah. All I need to know is that it's still going to live and I'm going to still see more episodes.
Right. But that's, you gotta say that is a pretty funny story about how they lingered and weren't sure whether they wanted, and Netflix was like, this is doing great for us. And as we say, Netflix knows things that Channel 4 doesn't, right? Because Netflix knows all the secrets on the inside that they don't have to tell anyone. So they knew it was a huge hit. And so they were able to kind of make a move when Channel 4 maybe, you know, wasn't paying attention.
Right. And I think even pre-streaming, well, I guess it was both. It was both a number of DVD box sets that went out. And then it was probably even pre, you know, early Netflix, the Family Guy. That's how Family Guy made its comeback.
Right. Right. We forget now that Family Guy was off the air for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And then got brought back.
Yeah.
I think we've yet to see something perfectly analogous to this, but it wouldn't surprise me at some point if that. Oh, that's a classic Tim Goodmanism.
Yeah, it is.
Wouldn't surprise me if at some point that something like that were to happen, right? Where Netflix gets a read on something that the network is like, yeah, we're not that interested, and swoops in, and it turns out to be actually a big success for Netflix because they have the data that maybe the network doesn't have about how well it's doing.
On some level, that's true for Arrested Development, but yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true, right? And you know, some of the other stuff, some of the revivals are doing, your Fuller Houses.
Yeah,
you know.
Those.
Okay, here is one from Robert, who did not tell us where he's from.
Ugh, Robert.
I like this one though. This is and there's a clear answer to this. What's the deal? Maybe it's Jerry Seinfeld. Hey, what's the deal with these winter finales? So, and breaks for all these network TV shows. When I was younger, I remember shows going off the air for the week of Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's. These days, shows are off the air for weeks on end. Empire's been off for about 12 weeks. Scandal, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., others were off for 8 or 9 weeks. If they're adding more shows to the end of the season, then maybe it'd be forgivable, but the seasons still have the same number of episodes, so what gives? Why such long breaks? I can answer this, which is your memory is a little faulty. Even in the heyday, it's been a long time, like since before you were born, that they ordered like 28 episodes of a show. It's usually been about 22 to maybe as much as 26. Mm-hmm. 26 was the magic number for because it's half of the year. So even the most order you would possibly get was 6 months worth of episodes. The most, and most shows didn't do that. And that's 6 months of episodes, and the TV season is 9 months long. So you got 3 months of reruns that you have to stick into the schedule. So you may not remember it. And they didn't used to necessarily take breaks because they used to just drop reruns in, you know, they'd run 2 new episodes in a rerun and then 4 new episodes in a rerun back when reruns were a little more viable than they are now. Now they're like, look, we're out, or we're just going to do a rerun binge for a while to get you caught up. So the way they played this stuff out has changed, but the numbers haven't changed. I mean, yeah, there are now shows with 13 weeks or something like that, where they just run straight through. But for the big network shows, it's still the same math, which is they've got 9 months from the beginning of September to the end of May that they have to fill, and they don't have 9 months worth of episodes. So they have to take breaks. So the big change is just now they tend to try and show them in blocks because they want to keep ratings momentum, where back in the old days, people didn't even know that it was a rerun and they didn't care or something. I don't even know. When we were kids, we didn't even pay attention to that. But that's the kind of the bottom line. It's math. There are too many weeks in the TV season, the traditional TV season, for you to fill them with show every week.
Yeah, it's the 22 episodes, 36 week season. That's where you get it. And now with everybody trying to go year round season, there's always going to be gaps.
Right? 14 reruns have to, or preemptions have to happen if you've got 22 episodes in a 36. And that's why Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. goes off and they put in Agent Carter, is they can just slot it right in there and there's 8 or 9 weeks.
Right.
Boom. Taken
and
out.
That's how the future should be. That's how it's going to be. Because there's still, it's funny because I'm going to how am I counteract myself here? But critics are always saying, okay, if you're off the air for a really long time, you come back. And we've talked about this here on the podcast. You know, no one's going to be there. And sometimes that's really true. People are off the air for a really long time and they come back and their ratings are down and the networks are surprised. And the critics go, that is stupid. Of course they're down. Except Empire came back and they were up. They had been off basically forever. And they came back and they were huge. So that audience was waiting for them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. But I mean, that's the bottom line is the rerun behavior has changed a little bit. But in the end, they still have to do reruns or preemptions because there's not enough. There's just not enough shows.
Yep.
I'm just feeling this. I was watching the Flash came back after their mid-season break. They ran two episodes, and Arrow was the same way. Two episodes back in reruns for another 3 weeks. And it's maddening, but at the same time, they backdated from the end of May where they want to drop their finale, and they don't have enough episodes. So, and they do 23, I think. They do a lot of episodes, but it doesn't matter. They don't have enough weeks, so more reruns.
Yeah, I know. It's part of that. That model for networks, it's tough.
Yeah. Here's one from Donnie in the 206. 206, do you know that one?
That is, yes, Seattle.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, okay.
Yep, Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
With all the talk of Netflix original programming, there's one question that's still unanswered. Will Netflix know, this is great, speaking of something we talked about earlier, will Netflix know when to end its shows? One thing I respect about networks like AMC and HBO is their willingness to work with creators to give their shows a proper end date. On the other hand, networks like Showtime and the CW seem happy to renew shows forever, as long as they're making money. This is why some networks have all-time classics like Breaking Bad and Mad Men, and others have Lumberjack, Dexter, and season 32 of Supernatural. With the recent announcement that Netflix is continuing House of Cards without its original showrunner, I'm worried that all they want is quantity over quality. What do you think? Can we look forward to season 12 of Daredevil sometimes in 2026, or will Netflix know that even their biggest hits need to end sometime? This is such a great question, and I think we don't know. I mean, I want to hear your speculation here, but I think we don't really know an answer, do we? Because it's too new. We haven't seen Netflix or any of the other streaming providers have to deal with, like, what's the math of an aging show and when do you put it out to pasture?
Yeah, and they are not, and their renewal patterns are not predictable enough yet. You know, HBO renewal patterns are pretty clear, and same thing, you know, same thing with Showtime for the most part.
But like House of Cards, that's kind of a surprise, right? It's been on a while. They're losing the showrunner. It doesn't matter. It's coming back.
Yeah, I think, again, since we don't know the ratings, it's much harder to make a guess on this, right? I mean, that's the correct answer to this. Not knowing ratings, it's hard to make an educated guess on why they are keeping something or when they would likely let it go, because we could say, oh, look, the last three have been A, bad quality, and B, going downhill with ratings. We don't know that now. So, but I think there's a little bit of sentimentality on their part because that was their first big one. You know, that was, I mean, obviously Orange is the New Black ended up doing better and certainly was more acclaimed than House of Cards. But House of Cards was the one that put them
on the map.
Yeah. And so I read an interesting thing the other day because Lacey Rose from THR just did a really interesting profile of Will Arnett. And
yeah, that was really good.
One of the quotes, yeah, and so in the piece, you know, she talks and he talks about how devastated he was that his show Flaked, which he wrote, which basically about his life, was so poorly reviewed. But in, you know, in the next breath, two paragraphs later, Ted Sarandos is saying he's not actually renewing it in the story, but boy, it certainly seems like he's going to renew it. And so you have this black cloud that Will Arnett is about how poorly this was received. And then all of a sudden, you the guy who runs Netflix says, I really love what he's trying to do. This is a really interesting concept. It's like I don't think they're giving up on it. I read that and I was like, oh my God, they might renew Flaked, which
or he's saying we want to be in the Will Arnett business, and if this isn't it, I mean, keeping in mind that they've also got BoJack Horseman, right?
Yeah, sure, and they do want to be in his thing. So, but I don't know. I got to tell you, I wouldn't put it past Netflix to do another season of Flaked, honestly.
It's really interesting. I think it's going to be it's so fascinating, and they maybe one day they'll tell us. but probably not. The idea of, they know exactly like how many streams a new season, because the idea is eventually they've got a catalog, and you could argue like they don't need any more because people are just going to watch the catalog. But if you know that a new season gets devoured like with these numbers, and people are coming back to watch the new season of House of Cards when it drops, as long as that number stays pretty high, I guess you just keep doing it, right? Because it's like, why, this gives us what we want, which right. is a big bump when we do a premiere.
Yeah, and also in the ones where when it's part of their business model to not worry about ratings, then you just have a gigantic question mark. And I think there's enough years have gone past that people probably have forgotten this anecdotal story, which to me is both a facepalm and hilarious because it did actually happen. It's been so long, people might have forgot the story. But, you know, Arliss on Showtime was very, very famously reviewed because the guy running HBO at the time was in a taxi cab ready to kill the show and say, okay, you guys, we've milked this thing for all we can get. It's been on. And the taxi driver found out he worked for HBO and went on and on and on about Arliss in the cab, right? He gets, uh-huh. and it's what's his name, he's running Stars now. He gets out of the cab, goes in and says, yeah, we're renewing Arliss. And it was like, everybody's like, what? Wasn't the memo that we're just going to kill it? No, the cab driver loves it. So he probably represents something we're not following. Yep. That's why you had more Arliss.
More Arliss. $2 signs. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. So I think that's a really cool question from Donnie. And this is one of the most, for me, it's one of the most fascinating things about TV right now is how are the rules different if you're a streaming service? And we don't know all of that. It's really interesting.
We don't have the analytics.
No, only Netflix knows for sure. One
and
day,
it could, you know, it could be a cab driver over there too.
Could be,
or a monkey on a wheel.
They're not saying
no.
That monkey is just doing its thing behind closed doors. We can't we can't tell what the monkey's doing.
Yeah.
So. Let's see. We got one more. It's from our buddy Maivo Gun Poetry. MVP.
Oh, nice. MVP.
MVP. MVP. He's in the, in case you were wondering, the 716. So this is upstate New York.
I remember him recently on Twitter being very eager for our next episode.
Well, here it is. I have recently revisited The West Wing, speaking of, and have forgotten how universally great the entire cast is. What is your favorite TV cast, and was it shaped by the talent of the actors or how well they fit the story? For example, of the latter, I loved Fringe, and the cast was perfect for that show, but in other roles, I have not loved them as much. MVP. What do you think? Good casts.
Well, and I love the West Wing cast was great. I think the Mad Men cast is fantastic. Uh-huh. Breaking Bad cast, you wanted to see all those guys all together all the time. I think though, if you're going to go back for like true love in many ways, that a comedy is going to be the one that people will mostly remember, like whether it's Seinfeld or Cheers. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones I think that people are going to say, "Oh, I loved all those guys." For me, it was also, you know, I go back and I look at like Hill Street Blues and Homicide: Life on the Street. Those were great casts.
Yeah, those were great casts.
So you really want to see those guys all together. And, you know, if you have a bunch of people you like, I can't even imagine like not wanting to watch Seinfeld, that cast.
Right. MASH.
You know? Or Cheers. Come on. So good. MASH. Yeah.
Yeah. Barney Miller. Really great cast.
Oh, yeah. Great
sitcoms.
Cast.
I mean, casting, it's funny. If you cast a show right, even if your material isn't great, the show could be a huge hit. And if you cast your show wrong, you can have the best scripts in the world and it doesn't matter. That's what I always think of about Friends is, you know, it was a sitcom and it wasn't badly written. It was fine and those writers were sharp, but they cast the right people. They got like they got six good casting decisions, and that usually doesn't happen. Like NBC tried that 50 other times and it didn't work, but that time they got the right people, and so that show was a wild success because of it.
Casting gold on Friends, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I was trying to think of other. It's funny. You're right. Ensemble shows. Homicide was a great example of that.
Well, I did a whole column on the fact that. You wouldn't, Mr. Robot would not work without Rami Malek.
I mean,
just wouldn't.
Totally.
It just completely would not work. And just to, you know, I mean, I'm not saying this show is as good as Mr. Robot or will even be a good show. But I will say that since we just talked about the Girlfriend Experience, you know, Riley Keough is perfectly cast in this because she's not like she's not like the first person you look at in a room. She's maybe the second person you look at in a room. Or she doesn't wear a lot of makeup, and she's a second year law student. She looks very beautiful naturally. She's not made up like she's gonna be like, oh my God, she's bursting off the screen with all her makeup. In fact, all she really does is change her hair. She wears her hair up in a bun when she's in the law school and takes it down when she's doing her high-end escort service. And as a character, she completely changes. But just quickly to wrap that part up about Riley Keough, she also has a very placid face. And I know from talking to them that some people are very off-put by that because you don't know – like, what is she thinking? Like, if you look at the reviews, you'll probably see a lot of that. And I know that when they tested it, that was a thing too. People were like, I don't know what she's thinking. And to me, it was like, that's why the show is so good, you know, because you start to wonder if she's a sociopath, and that's fascinating. So she was greatly cast in that.
I'm going to toss out one more that is currently airing that I think may, in the end, go down in the Hall of Fame for casting.
All right.
Which is Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah.
That's
yeah.
I think those as some of those actors get other jobs in the off season, and then when the show wraps, I think that there are going to be that a lot of other movies and TV shows that are going to be populated by. Like today, Maisie Williams got cast. I read a story about her getting cast in the next X-Men spinoff movie, and they're all. I mean, yeah, I wonder about Game of Thrones. I think that is a good, huge, but good cast that is going to go on to do a lot of other great stuff too.
And let's not forget The Wire.
Oh, The Wire! To this day, we just saw. We just saw Lester in something. It was like, yes. It's Lester from The Wire, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's just like, that's
it.
All. In fact, I think he was playing a cop, and I think, like, literally it was shorthand for The Wire. Like, if you knew The Wire, you knew who his character was. Because, you know, come on, it's that's Lester so from The Wire.
Fun. Yeah, I mean, come on. That
is amazing.
McNulty,
all of them.
Great.
Omar,
yeah.
Man.
Fresbo.
and let's not forget, I mean, the, oh my God. Yeah, the whole cast. I was going to say Idris Elba.
Oh yeah, so Stringer Bell. It's like amazing.
I mean, yeah, and Wallace.
Where's Wallace? Where's Wallace at?
Yeah, just and that's you know, and that's Michael B. Jordan, right? Little Michael B. Jordan.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
Anyway, they nailed it. Everything.
There you go.
It's
the
so
Wire.
Good.
MVP. I hope that answers your question. should I do the numbers, or are you going to Columbo me?
No, I'm.
I'm worried now. I'm concerned.
I know. I've got you all antsy.
Yeah. You never know. Okay. Well, I'm just going to start, and then you can interrupt me if you want to, because that's how we do this sometimes. Here's where you can find us. You can send us an email, podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. You can go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/tvtalkmachine. And of course, you can tweet at us. The show account is @TVTM. I definitely check that for tweets before we get started. I'm Jay Snell, and Tim is Bastard Machine. And you can get the show notes for this at theincomparable.com/TVTM. And we'll have the links to Tim's reviews and stuff in there, as we always do. All right, that's it. We're done.
Yay!
We will release this episode simultaneously, and then you will have listened to it, and then this will be the end. But we'll be back next week for number 78. Until then, Tim, it's been a pleasure as always.
Good to hear your voice, and let's do this again next week.
All right, we'll see everybody next week.